The J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. I'm Ben Maxwell. Sam Robson isn't with us this week as he's failed a late fitness test. So Sean Carroll is riding shotgun on this episode. Sean, welcome back to the pod. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. But yeah, a little bit nervous having to fill such big shoes. I'm wishing Sam all the best to her. Hope he's feeling well again soon. But yeah, looking forward to chatting the latest round of games. I was going to say the weekend's round of games. But yeah, I had to check myself there because there seems to be games every other day and I'm losing track of what day it is. But yeah, looking forward to discussing them.
All right, fantastic stuff. And yeah, sending our best to Sam. We knew the grind of this season would begin to tell on the players, but who knew that niche podcasters would also begin to feel the effects. But yes, Sam, get well soon, mate. So Sean, yeah, it's less than 2 months since your last J-Talk appearance, but since then, a whopping 11 rounds of the top flight have been played. So don't worry, I'm not going to ask for your thoughts on every game that's been played since you were last on, since match day two. But yeah, I mean, you mentioned it earlier. It's hard to keep track. I mean, the games are, once again, check this off your J-Talk bingo card, the listeners. The games are coming thick and fast. I mean, yeah, five of the teams over the weekend have played their fifth game in the space of the last 2 weeks, and four of them have a Levain Cup quarterfinal coming up this Wednesday. I mean, it makes the head spin, doesn't it? Just the amount of football that these players have been put through.
Yeah, I mean, you're starting to see it, I think, in the games. I watched probably three or four games over the three divisions over this weekend, and I mean, the players look exhausted. I know the heat of the summer tends to sap the energy out of the players anyway. But there were, you know, I really got a sense that, you know, there were teams that you're thinking, well, they need to go for a goal. I was watching Kyoto against, oh God, who were they playing this weekend? Was it Verdi? I think it was Verdi. And they needed a goal. And it was just like, they didn't really look like they were going for it. You know, they were 2-0 down. There was still like half an hour to go or something. And you're thinking, well, this is when they should be throwing everything at them. And they just seem to sort of look as if to go, well, this game's gone. There's no point kidding ourselves and trying to get a goal back. It was really weird. So yeah, there's that aspect of it where the players must be feeling the strain. I mean, as we've both touched upon, like it's hard enough for us guys watching the games to kind of keep up to date with what's going on and keep tabs on things. For the players, it must be so draining. And then yeah, for us watching it, I mean, I went to get El Golazo on Friday morning last week, and I was thinking I was going to be reading all about Atsuto Uchida's retirement speech and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then I picked up the paper and it wasn't mentioned. And I was thinking, well, that's a bit harsh. Why have they not given him much of a shout out? And then I realized that he'd actually retired two games ago, even though it was only like 4 days before. Yeah. That Kashima had played another game since he'd retired, and I'd sort of just completely forgotten it because, as you say, the games are coming every 2 or 3 days for these clubs, and it's just so hard to keep up to date with who's played who and what the score was and who's in form or out of form. But yeah, we'll try our best over the next hour or so to do just that, I hope.
Yeah, most definitely. And we should just fill the listeners in that, yeah, Sean's actually gone for a stroll outside in the balmy late August evening. So, yeah, if he sounds like he's huffing and puffing a little bit, well, that's probably because he is. And it's quite toasty outside, even as we record at about 9:45 on the Monday night. But, yes, Sean, that's the sacrifices we make for J-Talk. So I very much appreciate that.
Yeah, well, that's part of it. And also, since coronavirus hit, I haven't exactly been getting the most exercise. So, yeah, I'm probably a bit out of shape, rather like some of the J-League players will be, I guess, in a few months. They'll be feeling the strain from too much exercise. I'm probably feeling it from having sat around too much. So, yeah, apologies to any listeners who are put off by my heavy breathing. It's nothing untoward. It's just a lack of fitness.
Very good. All right, then. Well, I thought we'd begin by just quickly looking back at the three games from last Wednesday, Sean. Now, they were hard to keep track of because they were pulled from three different match days scheduled for October and November. And basically, yeah, the three ACL clubs played a home game from one of those match days last Wednesday. We can spend, well, next to no time would be perfect for me on FC Tokyo 1, Kashima 2, because FC Tokyo were absolutely dreadful. But the other two games were far more interesting. Kobe fell behind, but then lost the lead in the second half and had to be content with a 2-2 draw against leaders Kawasaki, who failed in their quest to bounce back from their first defeat of the season last Wednesday. But obviously we'll come on to what they did to Shimizu on Saturday night. But yeah, I guess the big story from Wednesday, Sean, was the defending champions Yokohama F. Marinos. Again, they've had a contrasting result this past weekend, but they certainly looked very ominous by beating Sapporo 4-1 at home as they rose into the top six for the first time this season. So they certainly appear to be starting to move through the gears to the defending champions.
Well, yeah, I think they do. I think they were partly helped by the fact that Sapporo had a worse defence than Marinos, just absolutely atrocious defending in that one. Again, it almost looked a bit like the Sapporo players have just kind of gone, well, we've lost this game. It doesn't matter if we lose 2-1 or 6-1. Let's just get to the 90th minute and have it done with. But also, I think what Marinos have done is they've brought in some very good, or, you know, maybe I'm not completely sold. Junior Santos at Reysol never really seemed to do too much. But bringing him in, obviously Nakagawa is fit again. Marcos Junior's fit again. Daisen Maeda's come in. They've suddenly got some potency in attack, some pace, some aggression in attack again. And obviously everyone knows that that's the kind of football that Postecoglou likes to play. So I feel like, yeah, you know, they're playing to their strengths again, but they've also got players now in the final third that can finish the chances off and, you know, can create enough chances that if they miss some, they're going to get more and take them. But yeah, they were definitely helped by a very, very flimsy Sapporo backline.
You mentioned Maeda there, and when his signing was announced, Sam and I wondered how much he would actually get to play, whether he would have to firstly work his way in front of Ada or Naiwu in the pecking order. And obviously, with the Brazilian attackers they have there, I wondered how much he'd actually get to play. But since he's come in, he's basically started every match with the exception of, you know, the normal rotation. So have you been surprised that he's come in and been played so much from the start?
No, not really, because Postecoglou seemed to have sort of lost a bit of faith in Edgar Junior and Eric. They don't really seem to be featuring much. I mean, last year Edgar Junior was outstanding at the start and then got a bad injury and missed a lot of the season. And we kind of assumed that once he was fit again, he'd be nailed on as number one. But as you said, sort of Onaiwu then seemed to be the first choice up front. So, not especially because Postecoglou seems to do that. You know, if he decides he doesn't fancy someone, then he has no qualms about dropping them and bringing someone else in. And I think Maeda really does suit their style of play. He's very direct, very aggressive, obviously very, very fast. So with him and Nakagawa being able to break in behind the lines, but yeah, they've got so many options up there that if he does drop out of form, if he does get an injury, if for some reason Postecoglou decides he's not quite doing what he wants him to be doing, they've got another two or three players that can probably come in for him. I mean, they've, you know, as we've mentioned, the teams are playing 2-3 games a week. Marinos have got, supposedly, they've still got the ACL coming up. We still don't know exactly, you know, if or when that is definitely going to be happening, but it looks like it's going to be. Obviously, they've got the Levan Cup as well. So they're going to basically be playing weekend, Wednesday, weekend for the foreseeable future. So maybe Postecoglou is just thinking, well, if someone's in form, he's going to play him until he can't run anymore. And then he'll bring someone else in and do the same. I don't know. But so, no, I'm not overly surprised. He's a player I've always rated anyway. And yeah, since he's come in, it's whether it's because of him or whether it's coincidence, but their results have picked up. So, yeah, I don't see any reason why Postecoglou would be in a rush to change him at this time.
No, fair enough. And I've just checked, actually, yeah, he hasn't been rotated at all. He has played the last five league game or started the last five league games. So, yeah, he's certainly been thrown in at the deep end by Postecoglou, five games in the space of 2 weeks. So, yeah, he's obviously put a lot of faith in Maeda and has been rewarded, obviously, already with a couple of goals. So let's move on to the weekend's match day 13 then, and we'll begin with the ACL clubs, and two of them faced off, obviously, at the Noivir Stadium. Kobe hosted Yokohama F. Marinos, and Sean, well, this had the best and the worst of the defending champions, I'd say. After they fell behind to a Noriaki Fujimoto goal that was handed to him on a platter by the keeper Park Il-gyu, F. Marinos then took a 3-1 lead thanks to a brace from Marcos Junior, one of them from the penalty spot, and the third from Teruhito Nakagawa. And that was 8 minutes into the second half. F. Marinos were 3-1 up and appeared to be cruising, only for, I don't know, the ghosts of a 2018 F. Marinos defending to return to haunt them, Sean?
I don't know. I think they had enough of them last season as well. I think Park got sent off on the last day of the season against your guys for being about 40 metres outside of his area and doing something silly. So, yeah, it's a weird one because I get what Postecoglou wants. I understand he wants him playing out for the back and stuff. But I mean, the error for the first goal, that wasn't a case of, like, you know, trying to play. You know when you're under pressure and they're trying to pass it out and you kind of go, well, it's a bit silly, but that's what they want to do. They don't want to lump it long. Like, Park was under no pressure. I think he was trying to pass it to Saneto. I didn't really have a Kobe player anywhere near him, and the pass was just about 5 yards off where it was supposed to go, and he wasn't a long way from Saneto. So I don't fully understand how that happened. And then, yeah, the last two goals as well were far from solid defending. So there's times when you just think, I don't understand whether it's lack of concentration on the player's part. I'm really not sure because, yeah, just really, really bad defending. It was similar to when they got hammered away at Kashima. They just looked completely unable to carry out simple defending or even simple passing at the back, which just encourages the opponent on. You know, if they get caught out because they're pushing forward and trying to make it 4-1 or 5-1, then you can go, well, that's what he wants to do, that's the risk. But when it's unforced errors like that, it must be incredibly frustrating for Marinos fans. And talking of frustrating for the fans, you mentioned that Marcos Junior scored the penalty. I don't know if you noticed that Ikura, who obviously used to play alongside him at Marinos, sort of went up and shook his hand straight away and was all smiles about it. And you think, it was all very odd. Like, if he just kind of shook his hand as if to say, oh, you know, well done, mate, but let's get on with the game. But he sort of had a big grin over his face as if it was just in training or something. You're thinking, you wonder what the Kobe fans are thinking when they see that. You know, this is it's a professional football match. Their team is supposedly investing an absolute fortune in trying to become a proper successful club, not just in Japan, but in Asia. And you've just conceded a goal that's put you behind at home. And your goalkeeper's just having a laugh with his mate who he used to play with. I just thought it was a very, very odd thing to do. Mm.
Yeah, I did notice that myself as well. Yeah, that had me scratching my head. Yeah, as you say, if you're a Kobe supporter, that wouldn't have been the nicest thing to see. Two friends, are able to acknowledge each other in a game, but yeah, in a situation like that, it's not the time or the place. I wouldn't say
you do it off the, you know, behind the scenes when you go off at halftime or whatever, if you bump into him in the tunnel or, you know, after the game, you can kind of have a chat. But, like, in front of everyone, in front of the cameras, you know, it's not just the fans in the stadium. Everyone at home is watching too. I can't remember who it was, but there was I think it was a Man United Arsenal game, I don't know, probably 10 years ago or so now. And I think one of the Arsenal players at half-time, it was after Van Persie had moved to United, and as they were going off at half-time, this Arsenal player kind of, I think he swapped shirts with Van Persie, or he kind of was chatting to Van Persie and asking to swap shirts. And I remember it was just like a huge outcry back in England. You know, the Arsenal fans were livid that their player was, you know, just trying to have a chat with his mate and, you know, they were losing the game or whatever. And so, yeah, seeing something like that, you know, in front of everybody, because, you know, you all know it goes on away from the cameras, away from the fans. You know, players have mates that play for other teams, or they used to play with each other and they still get on, that's fine. But when you're out on the pitch and competing against each other for points in an official match, it just looked a little bit odd to me.
Yeah, no, agreed there. The penalty gave Marino's the lead, and as I said, Nakagawa made it 3-1. So, 8 minutes into the second half. But in a frantic finale, Fujimoto volleyed in on the stretch from Gotoku Sakai's cross in the 90th minute. So that's a brace for Fujimoto to match the brace for Marcos Junior. And then exactly 67 seconds later, a simple ball over the top exposed Yokohama's high line, and Kyogo Furuhashi raced clear and lobbed the totally stranded Park Il-gyu from the edge of the box. So, Sean, we mentioned... how many games these teams have had to play in recent weeks for Yokohama and Kobe. Yeah, it was their fifth game in the space of 2 weeks. Mental fatigue might have played a part in Yokohama letting that lead slip right at the death. But on the flip side, you have to give credit to Kobe for playing out the 90 minutes and getting their reward at the death. I mean, they could have won it in the 93rd minute too. There was a little bit of a goal mouth scramble, and Park had to bat away a shot from Keijiro Ogawa. So while F. Marino supporters are very, very frustrated to lose the lead so late, you have to give an enormous amount of credit to Kobe for fighting through their fatigue and, ending up with a point, as they'd done, obviously, on Wednesday against the leaders, Kawasaki, as well.
Yeah, I think so. I'm not sure how much of a mental fatigue there was for Marinos, because as anyone who's watched them over the last two or three years knows, like, these mistakes are fairly frequent for them. So, and they've had a few issues at the back. The central defensive partnership, which pretty much last year was unchangeable with Thiago Martins and Hatanaka, were just, they were the first choice. He seems to have chopped and changed a bit. Martins was injured, and then he came in, he was out of form, and he's tried a couple of options in there and it's not quite worked. So I'm not sure if there was sort of mental or physical fatigue there, or if it's just sort of deeper lying issues with their defence. And Kobe, yeah, absolutely. I'm sort of surprised that more teams aren't doing this. I interviewed Ranko Popovic ahead of the restart, and he was suggesting that the way he was seeing it for Machida was, because of the fact there's no relegation this year, because of the fact the games are coming so thick and fast and there's not really anything to lose overall, that he felt he was going to try and get the team to play more expansively, to just push for wins. And if you don't win in the end and you lose because of it, it doesn't matter. This gives you a chance to try things you wouldn't ordinarily do. But there still seem to be quite a lot of games where teams are being quite conservative. They're holding back. And, if you're 3-1 down and there's only 10 minutes to go, why not just go for it? In ordinary seasons, conceding another goal or two might be the difference in whether you stay up or go down with goal difference. But there's no relegation this year, so why not push it a bit? Why not make another couple of subs and see what you can do, especially against teams like Marinos, like Shimizu, like Sapporo, who are not the most solid in defence. I'd quite like to see a few more teams just going for it. And, if players get a little bit tired, then give them a rest on the Wednesday and play someone else instead.
Indeed. So, 3-3, it finished at the Noriva Stadium. Yokohama F. Marinos returned to Kanagawa frustrated. But, Kobe, their second home draw of the week against a couple of very handy Kanagawa clubs. So, despite the fact they lost the lead against Kawasaki on Wednesday night, I'm sure they will have been happy at the end of their exertions last week. So, the other ACL club who I mentioned were pretty woeful at home on Wednesday night against Kashima, FC Tokyo. They headed down to Kansai as well and visited Gumba Osaka. I think last week on the pod, Sean, I'm not sure if he caught this, but I said I thought that FC Tokyo actually didn't have that bad a record away at Gumba. But then the DAZN commentator mentioned at full time, after Tokyo had sealed a 3-1 victory, that it was actually Tokyo's first away win against Gumba for 12 years. So, I definitely got my facts wrong there. Perhaps there might have been a few draws down that journey that had obviously seemed like a very good result to me as a Tokyo supporter. So, but yeah, I definitely got my facts mixed up there. But anyway, it was indeed a first win away against Gumba for a very, very long time for Tokyo. A much changed team from Wednesday night, and they were, basically Jekyll and Hyde in these two performances. I'm not sure this was the easiest game on the eye for the neutral, but there was plenty of niggle in this. There was plenty of physicality in the game. The referee was the centre of occasion on more than two or three occasions, actually. There was plenty happening. FC Tokyo took an early lead through Diego Oliveira. He was able to place a shot into the net from 25 yards after the Gumba keeper Masaaki Higashiguchi and Kensuke Nagai had a coming together on the edge of the box. So, basically, Oliveira had a free net to aim at and scored the early goal for FC Tokyo. There was, plenty of goal-mouth action, but the next goal came 2 minutes before half-time, and it was a moment of Takashi Usami magic. Set up by Yosuke Idaguchi and Adam Milson, but finished off very, very classy way by Usami, who fired home from 25 yards. And they looked to have taken the lead, Gumba, in first half stoppage time, only for the linesman to rule out Hiroki Fujiharu's back post volley due to a very questionable offside decision. So I'm not sure if you've only caught the highlights of this game, Sean, or whether you're able to watch an extended version of it. But, the first half, there was plenty of incident. There's no questions about that.
Yeah, no, I only saw the highlights, actually.
So you didn't see Fujiharu's disallowed goal, because that didn't make the DAZN
cut. No, I was just thinking, when you were talking about that, I was thinking, damn, I told Ben I'd seen all the highlights, but I don't remember seeing a goal disallowed. But yeah, of course, this is Japan, and you know, if the goal was disallowed and there's any question, the referee might have been wrong, or you know, often you get a penalties given, and in the highlights you just see the actual penalty itself. You don't see what brought it about, which is an instant red flag that it probably wasn't a penalty. So I don't know, but yeah, you just from your comments saying that you felt Tokyo played well, from the highlights I watched, it looked like they were quite lucky to get the win. I thought Gamba probably deserved at least a point from what I saw. I think from the highlights, Hayashi made a couple of very good saves for Tokyo throughout the game. But again, I think it's, you know, with this schedule, it's just making it so difficult for any team to really, well, except for one very special exception at the moment. But yeah, for most teams, to hit any sort of consistency, you know, teams will win on Wednesday and then get hammered on the weekend, and it's just so hard to keep any level of consistency when either the players are getting as tired as they are, or the coaches are having to change five or six players each game, and you just can't build up those rhythms that you need to get that consistency in results.
Yeah, I suppose at the end of the day, when I look at it, with taking my red and blue glasses off, I mean, yeah, Tokyo have scored three goals. The first one, early doors that I've mentioned, Oliveira. I mean, a different referee might have given Gumba a free kick when the Higashiguchi Nagai collision occurred, and Oliveira was able to shoot into an empty net, as I said. I mean, the second goal that, wanted to mention in the 73rd minute was the penalty stroked home just out of the reach of Higashiguchi by Leandro. And that came, again, Gumba supporters could feel hard done to after Kim Yong-Gwon was penalised for a very, very accidental handball, a Dialton cross from the right. And, the ball did strike Kim's arm, but there was absolutely nothing he could do about it. And then, the third goal, it wasn't quite a gift in the form of Fujimoto's opener for Kobe against Yokohama, but basically Hiroki Fujiharu has passed the ball to Leandro in inside the Tokyo half. Leandro's run half the length of the pitch and set up a Dialton for a first-time finish. So, Tokyo were given a goal. They were given the goal that sealed the game for them, and the first two came about in somewhat fortuitous circumstances. I guess for me, it was just an all-around better performance, and that probably wouldn't have come across in the highlights compared to Wednesday night, when the team, as I said, was much changed, but they never got going. I mean, they took the lead through a very fortunate own goal, but basically Kashima were the better team and ran out deserved winners. But here, Tokyo were much more aggressive in their pressing. They did win the ball back and set up a decent number of chances from their good defensive work. And overall, yeah, they were just in this game a lot more than they were last Wednesday. There was there were chances for Gumba. There's no questions about that. And I mean, this game really was had a real back and forth nature to it. I mean, on the hour, Leandro could have put Tokyo ahead, but then Usami blasted narrowly over about 10 minutes later. After the penalty, Kazuma Watanabe had a header from 6 yards that was brilliantly saved by Hayashi, and then basically a minute later, Leandro was running clear and setting up a Adalton to make it 3-1. So, for me as a Tokyo supporter, a very pleasing result, but I know that it would have been a hugely frustrating for Gumba supporters. Obviously, the nature of a couple of Tokyo's goals and the fact that, yeah, they appear to be disallowed a perfectly legitimate goal themselves. So, it's a first win in a long time for Tokyo at Gumba. And, these two teams carry on to the next game. And, carrying on is what Kawasaki have done all season. They were finally able to right that wrong of the loss against Nagoya. As I said, they weren't able to win away at Kobe on Wednesday, but they handed Shimizu a footballing lesson at Todoroki on Saturday night. Sean, obviously the return of Kengo Nakamura and getting a goal on his return too, again, a gift. There were quite a few of them in this match day. They were the big stories. But I guess for Kawasaki, Sean, Shimizu were just the right opponent at the right time.
Yes and no. I mean, they were. But I mean, Kawasaki are just so good, aren't they? I mean, it was like at the end of last season, Marinos, they hit that. I think it was 11 games unbeaten and won 10 in a row or something. And sometimes teams just hit this form and there's no stopping them. I mean, they're... The confidence they're playing with, they just look like they're really enjoying their football. They look so motivated, so driven. You know, they're not complacent at all. They start every game at 100 miles an hour, and they've just got so many good players. You know, Kengo obviously isn't as young as he once was, but he's still a hell of a player. And when you're in a run of form, where you're already top of the league by, I think they're 8 points clear. I looked at their goal difference earlier today, and their goal difference is higher than the amount of goals any other team has scored. I think their goal difference is plus 29. I think it's plus 29.
That is correct.
And I think the next highest scorer is Marinos, who scored 28. So the goal difference is higher than what everyone else has scored. I think they've scored 41 or something.
Yep.
And it's just ridiculous. I mean, I know, Shimizu were absolutely atrocious at the back and gifted probably two, maybe three of the goals. But even so, like, you know, you don't often see teams that are that ruthless in the J League. Teams might go 1 or 2 nil up and then kind of feel it's a bit, you know, it's not on to really rub it in. But Kawasaki don't really seem to care. There have been games, you know, this time they brought on Kengo. There's been other games where Yu Kobayashi's come off the bench and then scored a couple. Obviously, Mitoma has come in and just, you know, nobody really knew much about him before the restart. And he's come in and is just setting up goals, scoring goals for fun. Hatate as well now is finding the net. They've just got so many good players, and they're all, because there's so many good players, obviously they're all kind of in competition with each other. They don't want to let their own standards slip because they want to still be playing games. And they just look so motivated, and B, they just look like they're really enjoying it. Every game they're out there and they seem to know exactly what they're doing. Whichever players are out there know their role, and they fulfill it every game. And you just can't see anybody stopping them. I know, they lost against Nagoya. They had a few chances in that game. You know, again, you're not going to go through a season unbeaten, especially a season like this where you're playing 3 games a week for the bulk of it. But you can't see them letting it slip, because not only would they have to slip up big time, but another team would have to hit the kind of form they've been in. And again, in an ordinary season, you could go, well, maybe somebody could. But with the way the fixture this is, I don't know if you can see anybody really reeling them in. And at the moment, you just can't really see them letting it slip. They're just playing some really, really good football, and it's just a pleasure to watch them at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's a great catch on the goal difference versus the goals for other teams stat, Sean. That's absolutely brilliant. I hadn't picked up on that myself. That's absolutely sensational, and that's just a mark of how dominant they have been so far this season. And as you say, grinding opponents into the dirt. 5-0 it finished on Saturday night. Areia Hotate bagged a brace. Leandro Damião scored the second. It should be said that Shimizu did have a couple of decent chances at 2-0, but Jun Sung Ryong was equal to them. And then, after Hotate had made it 3-0 in the 74th minute, Kengo Nakamura came off the bench. And then, was basically gifted a goal in the 85th minute. And, man of the moment, Kaoru Mitoma, added the finishing touch when he passed the ball home through the keeper's legs in the 87th minute. So, all of that, Sean, sets up an absolute humdinger on Saturday night at the Nissan Stadium. In terms of teams and their positions in the table, it's not quite hitting the heights of Kawasaki versus Gamba, or Gamba versus Kawasaki from earlier on in the season. It's not quite one versus two, but the defending champions, Yokohama F. Marinos, who sit sixth, host Kawasaki on Saturday night. Obviously, this could be any sort of score. I don't know what you're thinking, what you're feeling in your bones about how this might go, but I mean, the mind boggles. This just—it's just absolutely appointment viewing for anybody who's interested in the J League, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think at the minute you'd have to say Kawasaki are big favourites. Marinos, obviously, are still a very good team. Like, you know, they've been in bad form. They haven't started the season that well. But you know, you don't just suddenly become a bad team. You know, they sauntered to the league last year, so you don't just drop off that quickly. But I mean, Kawasaki, as I just said, are pretty much unstoppable at the moment. And, you know, if you going forwards, you know, both teams are capable of scoring a hell of a lot of goals. But I think it's the defences that you have to look at. And Kawasaki are just so much better organised, so much more drilled. You know, they're incredible going forwards, but they still manage to keep a kind of balance in terms of at the back. Again, you know, going back to their goal difference, I think they've only conceded 12. If my maths is right, they got 41.
That's right,
So that's what, like a goal a game, maybe slightly less. And Marinos, I mean, there's some games where Marinos could concede 12 in that one match. You know, they really are pretty slipshod at the back. So I'd be very surprised if Marinos were able to prevent Kawasaki from scoring, you know, at least a couple of goals, if not more. Obviously, you know, Marinos are capable of turning it on going forward, but with the way Kawasaki have been organised at the back so far, I think you still have to say Kawasaki are the favourites. But again, as I sort of touched upon before, Marinos might go, well, this is our chance. You know, people have already written us off. They're already sort of moving on from us and moving back on to Kawasaki, our V team. Let's show them that we're still around. And, you know, it's not implausible, but I think, you know, if you try to look at it as objectively as possible, I think I'd still say Kawasaki looked to be the favourites heading into that one.
Yeah, absolutely fascinating. I nailed the score in the Kobe Yokohama F. Marinos game in the transfer market prediction game, Sean, at 3-3. I tell you what, I reckon I might be entering a 3-3 as well for this one, because your points very well taken on Kawasaki and their all round excellence. But yeah, I reckon Yokohama F. Marinos will definitely have a point to prove after their fairly ordinary start to the season. As we said, they've started to click into gear, and I don't know, they might put on a bit of a show on Saturday night. But yeah, as you say, it's hard to see them stopping Kawasaki on the other end. But whatever you do, listeners, if you're if you're able to get around a screen, if you're one of the 5,000 people lucky enough to be at the ground, then obviously enjoy yourselves. But it's going to be absolutely brilliant, and can't wait for that one myself. Sixth hosting first, but two absolute powerhouses of recent seasons in the J-League. And of course, it's a Kanagawa derby. The form book goes out the window, etc. So should be absolutely brilliant. All right, well, moving on.
Is that on the bingo card as well?
cliche watch. Yes, most definitely. Yes, indeed. All right. Well, yeah, moving on. Cerezo Osaka had fallen from third down, from second rather, to third in the table after FC Tokyo's win on Saturday. But then they fronted up to a Yokohama FC on Sunday evening. And, bumped themselves back up to second place after a 2-1 victory. Hiroshi Kiyotake swept the ball home to give Cerezo a 14th minute lead. And Bruno Mendes finished from close range 13 minutes into the second half to make it 2-0 Cerezo. Yusuke Matsuo, his deflected strike in the 86th minute got Yokohama FC to within a goal, but Cerezo saw the game out to move back up to second. So, yeah, Sean, this game featured a couple of players we've been spending a lot of time talking about on the pod in recent weeks. Matsuo of Yokohama FC and also Tatsuhiro Sakamoto of Cerezo, who came close and on another day might have had a couple of goals if it weren't for a couple of fortuitous blocks from the Yokohama FC defence. So, I guess on this occasion, Matsuo won the battle in the fact that he scored the goal. But, Sakamoto's team definitely won the war as Cerezo returned home with all 3 points. So, I don't know. Yeah, Cerezo, we've talked about them at length, you know, and I think you might have been one of the first people to bring it up, how their sort of style of play would be suited to the grind of, 3 games a week. And I guess that's borne itself out because, they're sitting fairly comfortably up in second. But also, I'd love to get your thoughts on Yokohama FC because, in sort of Ranko Popovic style, they seem to have been able to let the handbrake off in the last couple of weeks, and that's brought them some good results and also, I guess, an honourable defeat like they had here on Sunday evening.
Yeah, I've been a little bit surprised, actually, because at the end of last season, I know, obviously, it's different when you're pushing for promotion or you're trying to avoid relegation, which they thought was going to be their aim this year. Obviously, with the change because of the coronavirus, they don't have to worry about that. So maybe they've been able to take the handbrake off, as you said, a little bit more because there's nothing to lose. But at the end of last season in J2, when they were trying to hold out for promotion, they were very almost sort of Cereza, like, you know, they were quite happy to grind out 1-0 wins. They were very well organized defensively, very compact, and then they'd rely on Matsuo or Nakayama or someone, one of their sort of younger, pacier players to come up trumps. This season they've started reasonably well. I know there's obviously that stat that they'd already won 4 games, which was as many as they managed the last time they were in J1 in the whole season. In the likes of Matsuo, you know, you've got these sort of sparky players that are able to make something out of nothing. And they're the sort of players that you I sometimes worry about in the J League, that they're going to be sort of, you know, they're going to kind of have it poached out of them. You know, people often said that about Joe Cole when he went to Chelsea and Mourinho was there. And, you know, you get these flair players or these players that are more about instinct and doing stuff off the cuff. And then they kind of just get sort of ground down and told to work more for the team rather than just playing as it comes naturally, and Matsuo is definitely one who is able to make stuff happen from nothing. And they've got a few. Obviously, they've got rid of Iba and they've brought in Ichimi, who did very well last year at Kyoto, and, you know, obviously a younger, sharper kind of player. So they've got these sort of sparky players as well. I think they've definitely been helped by the fact there's no relegation. I do wonder if Shimo Taira would have had the team set up quite so. I wouldn't say entirely carefree, but, you know, quite so sort of proactive. If there was still a chance that they could be going down again, I think, you know, the fact they've been given this season for free, they've got a free pass to just see how things go, I think has enabled them a little bit. But yeah, they did well. I only caught around the last half an hour of this game, and they looked pretty good. By that point, Cereza were already 2-0 up, and obviously, you know, that's twice as many goals as they usually used to sitting back on and hanging on to. So, Yokohama had a couple of other half chances in the bit of the game I saw, so they could have done. I also tweeted about the fact that there was Matsuo and Kim Jin-hyun having one of those funny, the fight to get the ball out of the net after it's gone in the goal, which I never understand because the referee's already stopped the watch. The ball has to get back to the centre circle, but, you know, Cereza are not going to take kickoff any quicker because Matsuo sprinted up there and put the ball there. They still know they've got to see out 5 minutes with a goal lead. And then you get these two players sort of squaring up to each other and pushing each other about the ball. And so I've thoroughly enjoyed that. It seems to be happening a lot more often lately. I don't know why, whether it's because I'm watching more games, weirdly, because I'm not sort of able to go to the stadium as often. I'm watching a lot more games. Maybe I'm just noticing it. But, yeah, stuff like that is what we watch football for. You know, that goalkeepers coming up at corners, outfield players having to go and goal. It's the little things sometimes that that make the game.
Absolutely tremendous. And yet another very interesting observation. Sean, yeah, I did see that tweet. And yeah, gave me a chuckle. Very good stuff indeed. And yeah, so Yokohama FC, well, their three-game winning streak is snapped by Cerezo. But yeah, hopefully they'll keep on entertaining in the weeks to come until, yeah, well, half of their squad drops dead. But yeah, they've been doing okay in recent weeks, which has been good to see. And yeah, Cerezo, they just keep plugging away then. They're not the easiest on the eye, but yeah, that's okay. They don't mind that. They're happy to get results. And well, yeah, they're actually joint top of the form table. In the last five league games, there's actually five teams who have taken 10 points from the last 15 available. So that shows you that. There you go, Sean. I can come up with a decent stat myself.
Yeah, yeah, you can. Very
yeah,
good.
Yeah. So yeah, actually, five of the top six. Everybody except Reds, who have taken 9 from the last 15, have taken 10 from 3 wins, a draw and a loss in their last 5 games. So Cerezo, 8 points behind Kawasaki, as Sean referenced earlier, but they do have a game in hand. Whenever the J-League will be able to make up all of these games in hand, especially Tosu, of course, having played only 9 games now, Sagan, and some of the other teams in the league have played as many as 14. All right, well, we're halfway through the match day 13 slate, so we will pause for a brief moment, and then we'll return after a quick hit of music to wrap up the other 4 games. Welcome back, and let's head next to the tongue-twister derby. Kashiwa hosted Kashima on Saturday night, Sean, and it's another example of a team keeping on going until the end and getting a result. In this case, Antlers, who it should be said were playing with a man advantage for the entire second half, overturned a late 2-1 deficit away at Raysol. And I have to say, it was an especially good evening for our boyfriends, Sean.
Yeah, I thought that might come up. I'm gutted because he never scores. I always kind of hope he's going to score because he never scores. And I always wind him up about the fact he never scores. And I'd had Raysol down on the transfer market thing. I had him down as a 2-1 win. And in the sort of 85th minute or whatever, when I looked, I hadn't seen that he'd scored. And I looked and it was like, 2-1 to Racer, and I thought, oh, here we go, this is good, I'm finally going to make up some points. And then I was watching a couple of other games, and I went back 10 minutes later, and it said 2-3, and I thought, hang on, what's gone on here? And I still didn't know, because there were so many games. J2 were being played that day, J3 as well. I was keeping across so many different games that it was only the next day when I sat down to watch the highlights and thought, right, hang on, what's gone on here? And then the commentator says, oh, Misao, what a goal. And I was like, what are you talking about? He doesn't score goals, especially not ones, well, his own commentators call every other goal Subarashi. But, he doesn't score good goals. And then I looked up and saw the replay and went, oh, hang on a minute. That's a pretty tidy finish. I think that was only the first goal. But then he got an assist for the winner, which came, I think, about a minute or two after Doi had flicked in a sensational little goal to make it. I think that made it 2-2, didn't it? And then the header right at the death made it 3-2. So, yeah, our boyfriends did well. And poor old Scott McIntyre's boyfriend in the Raysol goal would have been feeling very sorry for himself, I think, at full time.
Yes, most definitely. Well, yeah, this game certainly did not lack for incident either. Basically, a nightmare of a first half for Kashiwa. They lost 2 players to injury, and then, yeah, they went a man down after Shunki Takahashi was harshly shown a second yellow card in stoppage time. But remarkably, yeah, the 10 men of Raysol went ahead twice in this game. Both, of course, as you probably guessed, through Michael Olunga. He scored the opener in the 57th minute, firing home via his trusty left foot. And then, well, there was a suspicion of offside that was actually mentioned by the DAZN commentator. So there you go. There's a first, Sean. But, yeah, Kento Misao stroked a tremendous equaliser into the top corner from inside the D in the 72nd minute to stun probably himself as well as the rest of us. Then Olunga blasted home from a similar spot to his opener at 6 minutes from time. So, as Sean checked the scores, it looked like Raisol were going to pull off a famous victory with 10 men at home against the famous Kashima Antlers. But indeed, that very fetching young fellow, Shoma Doi, bobbed up with a late brace, a remarkable near-post flick in off the post to equalise in the 89th minute. And then, Misao set up Doi for his header in the 91st minute to break Kashima Raisol hearts. And, Antlers now up into the top half of the table for the first time all year. They are ninth after they have played 14 games. Some of the teams around them have only played as few as 12, though. But, that's just going to be a running theme throughout the season. Teams with games in hand or having played games more, etc., etc. Fifth in the table, Urawa Reds. They came from behind as well at home against Oita. For Trinita, it was the Kazushi Mitsuhira show. He volleyed Oita into a ninth-minute lead and basically had pretty much every decent chance that Trinita had throughout this entire game. But, in a weekend of gifted goals, there were few more egregious than Leandro's equaliser for Reds on the half hour. He headed Daiki Hashioka's cross right at Munkyun Gun in the Oita goal, only for the rookie keeper to fumble a simple catch and parry the ball over the line. Then 3 minutes later, Hashioka scored what would prove to be the winner when he flicked on Ryosuke Yamanaka's driven free kick, his header giving Mun no chance, and Hashioka certainly wanted everyone in the ground to know it was his goal and not Yamanaka's. Mitsuhira had a number of chances but was unable to find another way past Shusaku Nishikawa, and Red saw the game out to move, as I said, up to fifth in the table, Sean. So they've gone about this fairly quietly, I would say, Reds. They've snuck up on us, but actually do have a game in hand on two of the top three. So, I guess I'm probably a little bit guilty of underestimating them and the results they've been able to accumulate this season, even though they perhaps haven't been the easiest on the eye themselves.
Yeah, I agree. When I looked at the table earlier today, I was surprised that they were so high up. And as you mentioned, there's obviously the caveat that some teams have played less games, some teams have played more games, and with fixtures, pile-ups and stuff, some teams are just faring a bit better or whatever. And I think they were probably similarly to Tokyo getting their win away at Gamba. I mean, again, I only saw the highlights, but it looked like Oita were probably worth a point. Obviously Leonardo was gifted his goal by some terrible goalkeeping, and Oita missed a few more chances, so I think a point probably would have been fair all told. But it brings you back to this season where it's so hard to predict. A team can seem to not be doing that well, but you win two or three on the bounce, or you don't lose for two or three on the bounce, and suddenly you can really bounce up the table in terms of points. So I don't know. Reds, they've been all right, the bits I've seen of them. Obviously, they look to be a little bit changed. They were certainly a bit stale, I think. They seem to be stuck with pretty much the same core of players every week, regardless of how good or bad results have been for the last, you could almost say 4 or 5 years. But, they seem to be changing things up a bit now. I think they shipped off a couple of their mediocre Brazilians back to Portugal in the last week or so. Thomas Deng obviously seems to be starting quite regularly now at centre-back. They're starting to mix things up. Obviously, Leonardo's coming now. Koroki, I think, has been injured a little bit. But they just seem to be kind of freshening things up a bit. And I wonder if that is helping too, kind of off the pitch, just sort of, what's the word? what's the way of putting it, almost sort of cleaning the air a bit. You know, I think clubs sometimes, we've seen it, obviously, I'm sort of veering into John and Stuart territory a bit maybe now, so apologies to them. But, you know, clubs like Jeff United, whatever, in J2, where you get these clubs where it doesn't seem to matter who the manager is. There just seems to be an atmosphere of I don't know if you'd call it complacency or what exactly. And there was an era of that with Reds, and they just seem to be a little bit freshened up a bit now. There seems to be a slightly different air around them. So, yeah, perhaps that's what they needed. Not many people, myself included, thought it was an especially smart idea to keep Odsky on after a pretty miserable year last year. Obviously, ACL final aside. But, you know, whether you're a fan of the way the team plays or not, you know, they've, as you said, they're up there now at the end of the table they want to be at. So, yeah, they seem to be kicking on a little bit. And just to hark back very quickly to the Raysall game, you said about how it was, I think you said unbelievably or something, that Raysall with 10 men managed to move in front. But I think when you're starting with Olunga up front, it's almost like they start with 12 players every week anyway. He's just phenomenal. I mean, last year in J2, he stood out as being, you know, in a league that was way beneath his abilities. And he's just sort of moved up to J1 without any fuss whatsoever. He's just phenomenal. You know, he gets a chance and 9 times out of 10, he puts it away. So, yeah, what a player. I think Raysall fans have to be delighted that he stuck around and didn't move back to Spain when there were rumours of that. And I think the rest of the J-League are probably absolutely devastated he didn't, because it means at some point this season he'll probably be scoring against them.
Yeah, most definitely. 14 goals in 13 appearances for the prolific Kenyan so far this season. And, yeah, goodness knows what he's capable of in terms of a final goals tally if he remains fit. And indeed, if a European team doesn't come in and poach him off Raysall's hands. All right, so, Reds were one of just the two home teams to win in the 8 games played in match day 13. And we'll finish up, Sean, with the 2 draws from the match day. Obviously, yeah, Hiroshima and Sendai had a goal apiece in it. But, I would say that the major talking point of the 2 games was, obviously the 97th minute penalty that Mitch Langerak saved off the boot of Lucas Fernandez to seal a point for Grampus in a 0-0 draw at the Sapporo Dome. This game, at least from the highlights that I saw, appeared to be a game, at least in terms of chances, of 2 halves. Mu Kanazaki smashed a shot against the bar very early doors, and then Naoki Maeda shot narrowly over at the near post just past the half hour. But then all the chances were for Sapporo in the second half. Yuichi Maruyama had to clear off the line in the 77th minute, and then Douglas Oliveira fired over from 6 yards in the 87th minute after a sublime layoff from Jay Bothroyd. But yes, it all boiled down to that the decision from Mr. Nishimura to give the penalty to Sapporo for handball against Yuki Soma in the 94th minute. And after a lengthy delay, Sean, that I wonder whether indeed his own manager, Misha Petrovic, might have frozen Lucas. He might have given him too much time to think about taking his spot kick. I mean, why do you need to make 2 substitutions in the 96th minute when you know that this penalty is going to be the last kick of the game? He might have frozen his own player, I reckon.
Yeah, I didn't spot that. I flicked over and was watching this game, and because I had an accumulator on, and I'd put down this as one of my guaranteed more than 3 goals, because I thought the way Sapporo are defending and the way Nagoya are attacking,
right,
that's a guaranteed. And it was still 0-0, and I was disbelieving, thinking the J-League site had probably messed up and it was actually, you know, 8-all or something. So I flicked over and was watching it, and it was at the point where things seemed to be sort of petering out a little bit. I couldn't believe that neither team had scored, because, you know, they're both fairly good going forwards. Nagoya obviously are good at the back, but Sapporo haven't been lately. And yeah, when I watched the highlights back, you mentioned Kanazaki hitting the bar. I think the bar is still reverberating. Yeah. That. He got hell of a punch behind it. But yeah, I saw Bothroyd's interview after the game, and on DAZN, and he mentioned something about not being sure what had gone on the sidelines, and I didn't really know what he meant because it wasn't translated into Japanese, and I hadn't seen that bit of the game. But yeah, why you make any substitution before your own team's penalty, especially when you know if it's pretty much going to be the last kick. I don't really know what he was thinking there. I'd have thought Bothroyd would have taken it, but again, in his interview, he said he'd taken a couple of knocks and he was feeling a little bit sore, so he didn't want to risk missing it. And that Lucas Fernandez had been in form in training and, you know, would tend to put them away. But yeah, if his own coach has given him an extra couple of minutes to overthink it, and obviously Langerak is, I think Nagoya have got the best. Have they got the best defence in the league, or certainly one of them? You know, he's one of the sort of the most formidable keepers in the J League. So it's tough enough anyway, you know, having to face him one on one from 12 yards. But yeah, if your own manager gives you time to overthink it even more, it certainly doesn't help. But yeah, from the highlights I watched and for the last sort of 20-30 minutes of the match I saw live, I think probably a draw was fair enough. I don't think either team really did enough to deserve all 3 points from that one.
Yeah, fair enough. So 0-0, it finished after that late drama at the Sapporo Dome. Consadole Sapporo 0, Nagoya Grampus 0. And yeah, the final game, which I've already mentioned ever so briefly, was down in Hiroshima at the Edion Stadium. Leandro Pereira gave host Sanfrecce Hiroshima an early lead with a superb strike from the edge of the area in the fourth minute. And, Douglas Vieira really should have doubled Sanfrecce's advantage 5 minutes into the second half, only for Yasuhiro Hiraoka to block his shot on the line with the keeper nowhere. But Sendai took advantage of Vieira's profligacy when Shingo Hyodo, he was on for a first appearance of the season in the 69th minute, smashed a shot high into the net past the Hiroshima keeper Keisuke Osako just 3 minutes later to earn Sendai a point. An early goal from Leandro Pereira for Hiroshima and Hyodo equalising for Sendai in the 72nd minute. Hiroshima might have won it in second half stoppage time, and Sho Sasaki's eyes lit up when a deep free kick was bundled into his path 6 yards from goal, but Jakub Slovic got out to block him at point blank range, and yeah, that sealed the point for Vegalta. So I guess at the end of the day, Sean, we don't want to shortchange the Hiroshima and the Sendai supporters for their time to shine on J-Talk, but yeah, at the end of the day, there was obviously plenty happening on this match day, but not an awful lot down at the Edion Stadium.
Yeah, I think Hiroshima have done what they've tended to do in recent seasons, and they started very, very well, and they seem to have just dropped off a little bit. Again, from the highlights I saw, I think they probably deserved to win this one. It seemed like they had the better of the chances anyway. Again, from the highlights, you only really see that, but I think they probably had enough. But again, especially against a team like Sendai, who you know are always going to try and snatch something from a set piece on a count or whatever, if you don't make the most of it when you've got the advantage, if you don't add another goal or two, you're always at risk of being caught out. So I think they can't really have too many excuses. I'm pleased to see you got profligacy in there as well.
Yeah.
And you probably haven't read it because it was about J3, but my most recent article about Blaublitz Akita, I actually managed to get profligacy in front of goal in there, which I was very happy about. So yeah, I'm trying to fly the J-Talk flag as far and wide as I can.
Very glad to hear that, mate. And don't worry, it is queued up. I was doing prep for this pod, so I haven't gotten around to it yet, but it's definitely on my to-do list. No worries.
Well, it's good because it was written ahead of the game against Gifu, and that was part of the sort of thrust of the article, was that Blaublitz had this chance to put a bit more space between them and a team that was seen in the head of the season as being a team that were going to be challenging for promotion. And then the game, obviously, poor old Stuart again, their second game in a row that was postponed because of poor weather. So this one was called off at least ahead of kickoff. So they didn't get 45 minutes in and then decide it wasn't right to play. So yeah, the article is still good for I don't know if J3 are playing in midweek, but I don't think so. So it's probably good for another week. So I might give it another bump on Twitter in a few days.
Very good, very good. I'll be very happy to retweet it. No problems. No problems at all. Good stuff. All right. So yeah, they are the 8 games that were played in match day 13 reviewed, as well as, of course, earlier on, a check of the 3 games from the previous Wednesday that were hosted by the ACL clubs. Of course, the Tosu were not in action again last weekend. Their visit to Shonan was postponed. They've played only 9 games this season, as I think I mentioned earlier, where some other teams have played as many as 14 games. But yes, it's happy days for all Tosu supporters as their team is finally back in action in match day 14 when they host Yokohama FC this Saturday. So yeah, it'll be great to have Tosu back on the pitch. And yeah, we should have a full slate of games to review in next week's podcast. Of course, highlighted by the Kanagawa Derby, Yokohama F. Marinos hosting Kawasaki. Elsewhere for teams in the top half, there are a couple of really interesting looking games on the slate. A second place Cerezo Osaka host fifth placed Urawa Reds, and Nagoya, who are fourth, host Kashima Antlers, who are definitely rounding into some form after 2 very impressive wins in the past week. Elsewhere, Sendai host Gunma Osaka, Oita entertain FC Tokyo. It's a Shimizu hosting Kashiwa, so goodness knows what Michael Olunga will do to the S-Bolts defence. That could be absolutely anything, that game. Shonan entertain Kobe, and it's a Sapporo hosting Hiroshima. Those two teams are next to each other in the table, 12th and 11th, and both obviously coming off draws in this past match day. They'll be looking to get back to winning ways. All right, Sean. Well, sorry, I should also mention there are the Levain Cup quarterfinals coming up on...
Yes, the prime stage.
Yes, indeed. The quarterfinals that are just one-off ties, of course, due to coronavirus, etc., etc. So ever so briefly, it's a Sapporo hosting Yokohama F. Marinos, Cerezo Osaka hosting Kashiwa, Kobe entertain Kawasaki for the second time in a week at the Noriviru Stadium, and it's FC Tokyo hosting Nagoya in the other quarterfinals. So, yeah, this should be interesting. And, yeah, 4 of those teams will be playing their 6th game in 2.5 weeks. So goodness knows what sort of teams they're going to be putting out and, what sort of a state their players are going to be in at the end of the 90 minutes.
I was just going to ask you, as a Tokyo fan, what do you think of the Levain Cup this year? Because obviously there's that argument of there's so many games and it's just more matches. But because now it's only single matches for the quarterfinal, semi-final, it's a much shorter route to a potential trophy, which obviously brings in, you know, prize money, it brings in plaudits, it brings in probably sponsorship and everything else that comes with having, you know, being able to say you won a trophy. And now, you know, all of those teams are only 3 matches away from being champions, especially for the ACL teams who've they've not really played any matches. You know, usually the ACL teams have had to play 6 group stage matches at least in the ACL, but none of them have. Some of them only played 1 or 2. You know, what are your thoughts on the Levain Cup? Are you thinking, well, hang on a minute, this is a chance to actually win a trophy? Or are you thinking it's, you know, the same as usual, where it's kind of like it's a bit of a pain having to fit in these extra matches as well?
Well, no, I mean, I think in an ordinary league campaign where, yeah, a team wasn't, in our case, 10 points clear and clearly miles better. And, we might think, well, we don't want to be, playing the first team in a midweek and wasting their energies when we obviously have another league game coming up on the weekend. But, yeah, in this instance, when Tokyo are an ACL club, and as you say, I mean, the group stage was only 3 games, of course, so curtailed because of the virus. But, yeah, at this stage, as you say, 3 games to win it. And, I mean, my favourite memory as an FC Tokyo supporter is the 2009 final. So, when you don't have to go through the slog of the group stage, if you're at this stage of the competition, then absolutely go for it, I think. I would expect, actually, pretty much full-strength teams from all of these clubs because, a trophy is a trophy. I think they should all go for it. And it actually could be really entertaining on Wednesday night.
Yeah, because it's just odd because I wrote something about the Levain Cup a few weeks ago, and it was odd because The English version that I posted, most people were commenting saying, yeah, 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 I kind of agree. All I'd done is kind of said, I think they should maybe expand it to include J2, J3 and the clubs that are, what are they called, like the sort of associate member clubs or whatever that are down in JFL or whatever. And all the responses from English speaking people who read the English version kind of said, oh yeah, you know, this would be interesting. This sounds like a good idea. But the Japanese people, I think partly because the website screwed me over a little bit and gave it a very controversial headline that was not really representative of the article. But a lot of Japanese people were very angry and saying that this was rude and disrespectful, and which I hadn't really expected, because I was trying to write a kind of, I don't know what the word is, like a sort of positive piece saying that the J-League has expanded a lot and grown, you know, to three divisions since it began, sort of 25, whatever, almost 30 years ago. So maybe it should represent that. And it seemed like the English version got that across, and people kind of thought, yeah, maybe it's because, you know, people coming from England or wherever and knowing about the way the FA Cup and the League Cup are run, it gives this opportunity for the whole tier to be in, the whole sort of pyramid of the football, sorry, to be involved. But yeah, because of the headline that the article had, the Japanese, I think it basically sort of translates as like the Levan Cup is nothing but a nuisance.
Right.
Which was a line that was kind of in there, but it said like for many, it's little more than a nuisance, meaning, you know, players, clubs, you know, officials, whatever, it's something else to have to organise, which you kind of alluded to there, saying in a regular season, it's quite tough. You know, if you're in the group stage of the Levan Cup and now they've introduced this playoff stage, the prime stage, you might have to play. I think last year, Sapporo maybe played 6, 7, 8, 9, maybe 12, almost 12 games to get to the final.
Right.
Whereas if you're an ACL club, as you said, especially this year, if you're an ACL club, you play 3 matches and you win the title. Sorry, I've gone off on a bit of a ramble there, but I wasn't sure what your thoughts were on the competition as a whole. But obviously, yeah, this season, as you say, it's a slightly different beast because of the fact that they've chopped out so many games.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, I mean, yeah, Sam and I have talked about it. Yeah, we'd like to make it straight knockout all three divisions, and so I concur there. But as it stands at the moment, yeah, three wins away from a trophy. So yeah, all of the 8 clubs involved from the quarterfinals on will be looking to move on Wednesday night. All right, well, yes, mate, we've done it. Thank you very much. A terrific effort in Sam's absence. We very much appreciate it. We hope you haven't been bitten to death by mosquitoes as you make your way around the suburban Tokyo, but we've definitely enjoyed the atmosphere. The cicadas and the crickets have been coming through loud and clear, so that's absolutely terrific. And mate, thanks ever so much for filling the breach, and we very much appreciate it.
No worries at all. Always a pleasure, mate.
All right, well, that is it for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. A very big thanks to Sean Carroll, and of course to you for listening wherever you are. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J-Talk podcast. Yes, 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 yes.